Good time of the day, honorable members. Honorable Deputy Minister. The Department, Minerals, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ulfile Safaku. The chairperson of Ulfile. You are all welcome, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen. We can start by introducing ourselves. Honorable members first.
Good day. My name is Mbuyiselo Abram Telos. I'm from the rich part of the Diamond Prongs, Northern Cape. Thank you.
Good day. I'm Ellen Prince, and I'm from the Western Cape, and I'm a member of the Sports Committee. Thank you.
My name is Paul Pigis. I'm a member of the committee.
My name is Dave Smith. I'm from Limpopo.
I'm Kathy Lobiskoche. I'm from the Western Cape.
Good morning. My name is Bridget. I'm from Gauteng. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Jabonya Mbi. I'm from Mpumalanga Province.
Okay, hello back to the department.
The chairperson of the select committee, that really feels fun. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Maybe what we should do before I even get into this, we should ask the director general. Yeah, my name is Joshi Wilson, I'm the deputy minister for mineral resources. I just ask the DG and team to introduce themselves in this order, and then you can just make some opening remarks. Okay.
Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. My name is Tibede Ramunza, the Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Kateringa. I'm the Chief Compliance Officer of the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning. My name is Irene Singo. I'm the CFO of the Department.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is David Nsiza. I'm the Chief Inspector of Mines from the Mineral Resources Department.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Joel Rapela. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Mineral Regulation at the Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The name is Mozama Busa. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Mineral Policy and Promotion.
Good morning, my name is Busela Lomakagula. I'm a PLO. Morning, my name is Soli Hasmini, the head of the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Franz Moche. Oh, should we take the other teams?
Okay.
No, but... Oh, okay, okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson once more, and the honorable members of the select committees. Let me first take the opportunity to thank you for making it possible for us to meet today. We'd also like to state at the outset that we consider the work of Parliament to be critical in providing a platform for us to account to our people on how we will together move South Africa forward. We are committed to working with you and the other members of Parliament to make this a reality. The regulations of the minerals and upstream petroleum industries is at the heart of the department's work. We must ensure that these resources, as outlined in our Principal Act, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, or MPRDA, benefit the people of this country and help us to advance our broader developmental goal, central to which is ending poverty, unemployment, and inequality. As a Department of Mineral Resources, we are responsible for ensuring that the companies operating in our country operate in an environment that is conducive, while at the same time complying with the framework of laws and policies governing these resources.
key of this enunciated in the MDRPA, the Mine and Health and Safety Act, as well as the Mining Charter. Honorable members, the department will not hesitate to take decisive actions, an action where compliance is not adhered to by companies. This year, as you would know, marks the 10th year since the implementation of the Mining Charter. It does provide an opportunity and an opportune time for us to assess the state of company's compliance and areas where the Mining Charter needs to be implemented. While it is too early to give an update on this matter, preliminary findings soon show that while some companies have made strides in delivering on the requirements of the charter, others are lagging behind. We commit that the necessary action will be taken in this regard. The implementation of the framework agreement for sustainable mining, led by the President, provides a compass for guiding interventions in stabilizing this important sector of our economy. To this end, implementation of projects is prioritized in mining sites, and we will receive the necessary attention when necessary. The discovery of shale gas in the Karoo and coal bed methane in Limpopo are indeed an exciting development in the area of upstream petroleum and the possibilities this provides for socio-economic development in these areas, some of which are amongst the poorest in our country. It is encouraging to know that if we continue in this trend to develop these resources, we'll make a difference in people's lives. A set of technical regulations have been developed to regulate hydraulic fracturing activities in a manner that will be sensitive to the environment. Once consultations have been undertaken in affected areas, we'll then commence with the processing of applications. South Africa's mineral and petroleum resources are found across the country. As a result, work we do spans over all provinces over which members of the committee have oversight. I therefore understand your keen interest and the significant task you have in ensuring that we fully implement our mandate. As I conclude, Chairperson, I would like to once again thank members for this opportunity and look forward to your support as we present our budget vote and as we continue to engage on matters related to development of our minerals and petroleum. I must state this also that the Director General and team will be here also to go through the presentations that they have prepared, but state also that the Minister, as you know, our budget vote today, is also preparing for some media briefing that is taking place shortly. I might also not conclude the whole meeting with yourselves, maybe after the first presentation and some engagements, I leave you, Chair, with your permission, so that we can go and finalize this thing for our preparations this afternoon. I'm actually looking forward to seeing all of you at the deadline budget vote today. Thank you very much. I must take any questions or comments on the statement that I've made. I can just take those immediately before we go to the next presentation.
Thank you. I hope honorable members will allow the presentation to continue. I'm also pressing honorable members to submit question or statement. Can you allow the DG to continue the presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members. Our presentation will be in four parts. We will give an overview of the financials of the department, the budget that will be presented by the CFO. And as per your request, we will go straight into the programs. Program 2, which is that you should focus on Program 3 and Program 4. So without wasting any time, I will allow the CFO to start with the financials so that you have an understanding of the financials, and then we will zoom into Program 2, Program 3, and Program 4. Ms. Singo, can you start?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, Deputy Minister. We are just going to give you an overview of what the budget of the department for this financial year and the year, the MTF period looks like. The details of the budget are outlined on pages 25 and 27 of the strategy plan. But here we'll just show you the summary of the budget overall and the estimate per program. and also the estimated economic classification. I think when we describe the economic classification, we'll be able to answer specific questions relating to the problems that you wanted to see today. The overall budget, Chairperson, you remember that the Department of Mineral Resources only started, only was created in 2009-2010. So 2009-2010 is the first year where the department had budget of its own outside the Department of Energy. From 2009-2010, the expenditure increased from 853 million to 1.7 billion in 2013. For the 2013 financial year, we had a budget of 1.3 billion, which is going to increase with an average growth rate of around 6.7% to 1.6 in 2016-2017 financial year. And the reason for the increase mainly was the funding that we managed to secure for the rehabilitation of the derelict and ownerless mines, and also the special technical skills that are required for the implementation of the National Environmental Management Act. So if we go to the budget program, the slide shows how the budget, the total budget of 1.47 billion in the current year is allocated. The biggest budget goes to the program Mineral Policy and Promotion. This is where most of the entities that support the mandate of the department, like your Council for Geoscience and your MINTEC, resides. Then followed by the Mineral Regulations Program. And in the Mineral and Regulation Program, you will see the 2014-15 budget allocated for 231.3 million. And this is where the support in the regions is also there in terms of the regulatory framework for the MPRDA. The promotion of mine and safety, of safety and health, also consume 1.7.9 billion in the current year, a million in the current year, and mainly the inspectorate in the provinces. That's where this budget is allocated. The administration consists mainly of the corporate services unit, the ministry, and the support from the Office of the DG. I will elaborate further on the allocation per program. If we look at the administration budget for 2013-14, we had a budget of 310 million, which is expected to increase with a very marginal increase of 1.5 million to 314.5 million in 2016-17. The focus in this program is for staff development initiatives that corporate services assist with, and this includes the programs to attract skills in the mining inspectorate. With the issuing of license, we need information communication system that is effective. So in this program also, the budget is mostly allocated to information communication technology services and recruitment expenses. If we go into Program 2 is the promotion of mine safety and health. The 2013-14 budget of 153.9 million is expected to increase with a growth rate of, average growth rate of 5.5% to 188.9 million in 2016-2017. And this is mainly to ensure compliance with the mine health and safety standards by conducting inspections, audits, inquiries, and investigations. And this happens mostly in the provinces. It is also, the budget there is also allocated to further enhance the capacity in the province to conduct inspections. Then from the mineral regulation side, the budget for 2013-14 financial year was 154 million, is expected to increase by 9.2% to 216 million in 2016-2017. And this is more, the expenditure focus of our MCEF is to improve the process of issuing mining rights and payments. And also for the compensation, increase in compensation of employees for National Environmental Management Act implementation, and therefore the related goods and services will increase accordingly. When we look at the mineral policy and promotion, I've already indicated that this is the program where most of our entities reside. For 2018-14, we had a budget of 724.2 million, and it is expected to increase by 8.3 to 900 million in 2016-2017. The main purpose is to promote the mineral sector, strengthening the regulatory framework that governs both the mining and the petroleum sectors. In this process, the support to promote small medium enterprises it's also allocated in this program. When we look at the next slide, it shows budget per economic association, and I'll just focus on the transfer and subsidies because the 707.9 million that is sitting there, most of them goes to the project with which our entities support us on. In relation to the question that you asked about the acid mine drainage, this program implements various research projects and technical support projects, which includes the water ingress project. For that, in the 2014-15 financial year, we've allocated in 1.7 million for it. And also in this program, we also have the beneficiation, because most of the triggers for beneficiation strategies, compensation to employees, we are looking at something around 6.1 million based on what we have, which includes the compensation and the goods and services for beneficiation. From the shale gas side, we have just budgeted for consultations, and we are looking at spending at least 1 million per year based on the budget that we have. But as we go along, we'll then increase our budget. So the budget per economic classification shows that included in that 707 million is the amount that goes to the water ingress project, that goes to Council for Geosciences for research and support. Then majority, the cost drivers in the department is the compensation of employees at 476.7 million. Then lastly, Jefferson, we just want to indicate that as a department, we are committed to ensure effective, efficient, and economic utilization of resources. Over the past previous years, the department under expenditure was consistently below 2% of the budget allocated. We have oversight structures available to yourself, Jefferson. We will continuously monitor the implementation of the plans that will be submitted before you in line with the budget that has been allocated. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. What is the overall budget issues? If Chairperson agrees, maybe we could move on to program two, which is mine health and safety. I don't know how the Chairperson would like to handle it. Allowed, you can move on, please. Program two, Chairperson, it will be presented by David Nsiza, who is the Chief Inspector of Mines, responsible for this program.
Thank you, DG, Honorable Chairperson, members. Good morning once again. The purpose of Mine Health and Safety Bench is to execute the department's mandate to safeguard the health and safety of mine workers and people affected by mining activities. And our objective is to reduce mining-related deaths, injuries, and ill health through the formulation of national policy and legislation, the provision of advice, and the application of systems that monitor, audit, and enforce compliance in the mining sector. We've also included a slide on acronyms for ease of reference. I'll touch more during the presentation on the acronyms. Our program comprises of two sub-programs, the Mine Health and Safety, which are the regions. We have 10 regional offices, two in the Northwest area, Klerksdorp and Rustenburg, and we also have a governance and policy and oversight head office. The regional office is responsible for conducting audits, inspections, investigations and inquiries, enforcing the Mine Health and Safety Act and its provision, examination services and providing professional advice. And the head office is responsible for governance, development of policy and legislation that enhance enforcement work, technical support of the region, chairing of tripartite structures, FMQA, of the Mine Qualification Authority, and the Mine Health and Safety Council, administration and issuing of government certificate of competency, and facilitation of HIV and AIDS work in the mining sector. We have five strategic objectives. The first one is to promote health and safety. The second is to contribute to skills development, implement service level agreements, mainly with building capacity within the branch. And the fourth one is to develop and review internal processes to ensure that there's a transparent and consistent approach in the work that we do, and we improve the turnaround times. Please, I'll just read the slides within conjunction pages 50 to 57 of the third plan. Now, the next slide shows the occupational diseases that have been reported by the mining sector between 2008 and 2012. In terms of the Mine Health and Safety Act, the mines are required to report annually to the department the occupational diseases that were determined through medical examination. We are finalizing the 2013 figures. If you look at the slides from the left to the right hand side, it starts with the causes. The causes of diseases that have been caused by overexposure throughout the years on silica, mainly with the gold mine. And you have PTB. PTB is pulmonary TB. It's also mainly as a result of HIV and AIDS and dust. And NIHL is noise-induced hearing loss. It's also as a result of the historic overexposure to noise. CWP is the coal workers' pneumoconiosis, which is as a result of overexposure to coal over a long time. We have asbestos cases, and SITB silicosis, silico-TB, excuse me, and the other diseases. Now, if you focus on the total side, you can see that between 2008 and 2012, there's been an improvement in terms of the number of diseases that have been reported by the mines, about 42%. And over the same period, we've seen an improvement with the silicosis cases, about 20%. The pulmonary TB, about 40%, and so on. There's an improvement. But what is also interesting on this slide is that if you look at this slide, we no longer have any asbestos mines in the country. They have been stopped or decommissioned more than 20 years ago, and yet we still have cases of asbestos being reported. I think this is the indication of the latency effects of exposure. I think with health, it's different from safety. With safety, the impact is now, and with health, it takes sometimes. So we have programs together with stakeholders to try and reduce it. But although there's been some improvement over this period, we are still greatly concerned with the number of diseases that have been reported, as you indicated. And our ultimate goal is to ensure that there's a zero number of diseases reported. The next slide shows the fatalities by commodity between 1993 and 2013. If you look at the slide itself, the dark blue indicates the total fatalities over that period. The dotted red line indicates the gold fatalities reported. The green shows the coal fatalities reported. The yellow is the other, and then the light blue is the platinum. I think what's encouraging from this slide is that over this period, there has been a significant improvement in the fatalities that have been reported. And in fact, over the past 20 years, there's been an 85% reduction in the number of fatalities reported, with the gold sector for the same period 91%, the coal sector had 92%. In fact, 2013 has been the lowest ever, it was the lowest ever fatalities reported by sector. And it was also the first time that we've reported less than 100 fatalities at mine. I think for us, what is encouraging is the fact that the improvements, especially in the last 12 years or so, they have been happening with significant increase in the number of people working at the mines. So since the introduction of the MPRDA, there's been about 103,000 people getting employed. But although there's been this improvement, our greatest concern still remains that we are losing lives in the sector, and we are working together with the stakeholders to ensure that we achieve the goal of zero harm. And the next slide shows the fatalities by region. We for 2012 and 13 comparing, we have the actual fatalities and also the rates. The rates are determined in terms of the number of hours worked at the mine. I think generally, if you look at the slide, in terms of all the regions, there has been improvement, except some of the regions where we have also put some programs to make sure that we achieve a sustainable improvement. But overall, between 2012 and 2013, there's been a 17% improvement on fatality. If you
come back to the strategic plan, the first outcome, which is the transform mineral sector, supported by the first objective there, which is to promote health and safety. We measure ourselves through the percentage of reduction in occupational fatalities and injuries. Our ultimate goal is achieving zero harm. However, we have set for us to achieve zero harm and compare favorably with the other good performing countries throughout the world, that we can look at 20% improvement, but the ultimate goal is, you know, zero harm. Similarly, with the percentage reduction in occupational diseases, including TB, we are going to measure ourselves with that. And this is also in line with the National Development Plan, which also puts a lot of emphasis on reducing the TB cases reported. The last measure in that slide is the percentage investigations and inquiries completed. We do conduct investigations and inquiries into the accidents that are the mines are reporting. On the next slide, we also do inspections and inspections and audits to monitor our compliance with the provisions of the law, and the numbers in the brackets indicate the target. We also we monitor the adherence to the enforcement guidelines. As a department, we drafted and we are implementing an enforcement guidelines, so there should be a transparent and a consistent approach by inspectors when they issue instructions at the mine. Either they stopping a mine or part of a mine or issuing compliance notices. We want that there must be a consistent approach. We monitor that. We also develop the mine health and safety annual report ready to indicate the performance of the sector annually. And lastly, we also hold targeted workshops. We do them at the regional office, at the regions. It involves the organized labor, and it involves the employer representatives as well. On a monthly basis, quarterly basis, to ensure that, you know, we share on the issues of interest and concern and find ways of how we improve on them. The next slide is in terms of skills development. We implement certificate of competence in order to improve access. In terms of the law, we administer the certificate of competence examination. The law requires that for any person appointed in certain positions, you need to have a certificate of competence to enter health and safety. For instance, for one to be appointed in an underground mine, you need a mine manager certificate. For one to be a surveyor, you need a mine surveyor certificate, an engineer, an electrical or mechanical engineering certificate. You also need a mine operator certificate and also a winder engine driver certificate as well, in order to enhance health and safety. But over the years, the sector has been concerned about the issue of the pass rate in some of the certificates. For some of them, especially the survey certificate, it has been around 5 to 6%. So we've worked together with the Mining Qualification Authority to do some studies to understand why the low pass rates, and there's a report that we are considering and taking the recommendation forward. We also collaborate with the Department of Higher Education and Training, DHET, and other stakeholders, which is employers and the unions, through the Mining Qualification Authority to ensure implementation of skills development programs. Some of the programs including, we help the grade 11 and 12 pupils as well with math and science, so that we encourage them to go in the engineering route and also geology route. We also assist employees with ABET training. We issue bursaries as well through the MQA, can be electrical, mechanical, or any courses that will support the mining sector. We also support the artisan and artisan aid program. It has been estimated that in the sector there's been over 15,000 artisan aids, so we try to help them to develop their full artisan. We also have a program on jewelry making to support on the beneficiation strategy. I must also add that the NQA has established regional offices to bring its programs to the communities and the mines. We have currently an office in Limpopo, an office in the Eastern Cape, an office in Mpumalanga, Northwest, and the Free State. But the intention moving forward is to ensure that we have offices in the other regions as well, more especially within the FEC colleges. That's what the Minister demanded, suggested that we must try and prop up the FEC colleges. But our thing is to bring our progress closer to the communities and the mine. And next slide, in terms of efficient and efficient development for the intended department, we implement our service level agreements. As I've said, this is ready to make sure that we build up on our capacity. We get graduates who don't have mining experience, and then we take them to the mine
and we place them there for 2 years, and then we also bring them back to the department to make sure that they become fully qualified inspectors. We currently have 50 that we obtained this year in the different mines, and we do have the several level agreement. The SLA is with those particular mines. We also develop and review internal processes, as I said earlier, to ensure that, for instance, we have a procedure on inspections, all these investigations, inquiries, the enforcement guidelines as well, to ensure that if you go to every region, we have a consistent and a transparent approach on how we do things. Lastly, on that slide, we also have, we work on improving the turnaround times, mainly with the medical appeals, with the chief inspector appeals as well. And the next slide, with the MPRDA applications, we make input on those as well. And lastly, with the administrative tasks that come through our branch. And the next slide, although I've indicated that there's been some improvement over the years of safety, but we believe that our goal is still zero harm, and we believe that we have to continuously put measures on dealing with those. For instance, we are looking for the health side. We are looking at we established a chief directorate on operation health, and it came up with a strategy for enhancing health matters. And we also collaborate with social partners in monitoring the implementation of the 2011 summit commitments on elimination of silicosis, noise-induced hearing loss, TB, HIV, and AIDS. And mining companies now are reporting on the programs implemented in relation to HIV and TB annual to the department. And we also monitor the implementation of the guidance notes for the management of TB at the mines. Through the Mine Health and Safety Council, we are coordinating some research on the prevalence of non-communicable diseases. Non-communicable diseases are lifestyle diseases like hypertension, diabetes, epilepsy. Although it's not occupational, but we think that we must put measures in place as well to help the sector and the employees in that. It's also in support of the National Development Plan. The next step as well, to continue to implement enforcement measures, because we believe that one of the reasons for us to see some of the improvement that I indicated earlier is the measures that have been taken, and also the collaboration with the stakeholders. The council or the Manhattan Safety Council is also considering worker checking technology to assist during the situation. We recently had incidents where people will be trapped underground, and we'll send proto team members to search for them. But sometimes our biggest challenge that, and concern that we have experienced, it takes time, especially if there's a fire, to identify the illegal master, the employees themselves. So we are looking at research in this particular aspect through the Mine Health and Safety Council. So it could help us in identifying them where they are underground. And we also monitor the implementation of the 2011 summit commitments on elimination of fatalities and injuries. And the department will also be promulgating regulations on trackless mobile machinery, which include legislation on use of PDS. PDS is a proximity device. One of the challenges that we've been experiencing the sector is people being run over by machines can be trucks. And so we are looking at ensuring that the mines, they install systems that will detect the proximity not to human beings, and then maybe they beep or they can't the engine. And we believe that if we take that route, we might have a significant improvement on transport-related accidents. Last on the slide, as you are aware, we had a 5-month platinum strike. We've agreed with this. The mind that they must have what we call the startup process. In other words, they should not rush to go and work. In other words, they must take people through certain processes, including medical examinations. They must go through medical self-examinations. They must make sure that it's safe, and they must be trained. And we believe that it will help us in reducing accidents in the platinum sector. The next slide there, we will also be holding the Mine Health and Safety Summit. The summit is planned November this year. The purpose of the summit is to review the state of health and safety, as well as to make recommendations to improve health and safety in the mining industry, where us, the unions and the mines, we come together and we and the other stakeholders, and we engage in the challenges that we are facing and coming up with the strategies to deal with it. We also deal with the Mine Health and Safety Act to strengthen enforcement provisions, streamline administrative processes, reinforce offences and penalties, remove ambiguities in certain definitions and expressions, and to harmonize the Act with other laws, in particular the MPRDA.
Thank you.
Could you just remember the program 2 presentation and get guidance from the chair on how to take it forward?
Thank you for the presentation. Honorable member, can we allow the presenter to continue, then we'll pose question at the end. Thank you. Continue on.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. The next presentation is Program 3, Mineral Regulation. It will be presented by the DDG responsible, Mr. Ratzinger. Mr. Ratzinger, can you start?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The layout of the presentation, as I'll show on the screen, will cover three parts. The first one will detail the annual performance plan of the branch as outlined in the strategic plan. And part two of the presentation will provide an update on the framework agreement for the sustainable mining industry.
Can I make a request that we limit time on presentation so that we're able to have ample time and chance to engage the presentation? I think it is going to be important that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, can you just try to fast track that, but make sure that you cover only the rush. You can rise, but in the at the same time, make sure that you cover all the subjects.
And the last part of this presentation would cover the implementation plan for one environmental system for licensing of mineral resources. The purpose of Program 3 is to regulate the mineral and mining sector to ensure economic development, employment, and ensure transformation and environmental compliance. And our objective as a program is to transform the minerals and mining sectors into one that competitively contributes to the sustainable development of the country. Just to give a sense of how we are structured as a program or as a branch, we as a branch mineral regulation comprise of two sub-programs. The first one is mineral regulation and administration, and the second one is mineral regulation management. The mineral regulation and administration is responsible for the administration of the processing and mining rights licensing, monitoring, compliance of the MPRD. And this is primarily related to our regional offices. We've got 9-1 in each province. And mineral regulation management is responsible for overall program management as well as providing strategic support and oversight over the regional offices. Next slide. As a program or a branch, we've got 6 strategic objectives. The first one is promoting job creation. The second one, promoting sustainable resource use and management. The third one is reducing state environmental liability and financial risk. The fourth one is implementing transmission policies and legislation. The fifth one is monitor and enforce compliance. And the sixth one is improving turnaround times. This presentation should be read in conjunction with pages 58 up to 66 of the table strategic plan. Next slide. Around the strategic objective on promoting job creation, this will be through the number of jobs created when mining rights are being issued. Flowing from there would be the implementation of social and labor plans, and then we do conduct compliance inspections to monitor and enforce compliance. And secondly, around the number of social and labor projects that development that are implemented. And in this respect, also conduct monitoring and enforcement on an ongoing basis. Next slide. We thought that it's important that we also give honorable members a sense of some of the projects that are being implemented. In no way is this list exhaustive, but I just wanted to share with honorable members some of the pictures relating to projects that are implemented in communities that impact the lives of our people. And these are some of the pictures that we have. And I must also say that they're not covering all the provinces, but just wanted to give examples of some of the projects. Next one. This is a school in the Eastern Cape. Okay, thanks. With regard to the second strategic objective on promoting sustainable resource use and management, This strategic objective is the one that deals with the three pillars of sustainable development. We have a target of ensuring 100% of approvals of compliant work programs relative to the rights that are issued, detailing and covering the element of both the works program, which is the economic, and then the social and labor plan, which deals with the social aspects of rights, and this one is applicable to mining rights. And the third leg on the environment, that deals with the environmental management programs for mining rights and plan for prospecting rights that are compliant. And the target in all respects is one of shown on the screen is 100%. On the next slide, thanks. Around the third strategic objective on reducing state environmental liability and financial risks, there are two key measures. The first one is the percentage orders issued remedy inadequate financial provision. It is reduced through review of environmental management program in respect of financial position and the submission of performance assessment reports. And in instances where there is non-compliance, the anti-disciplinary action or notices are issued. And the second one around the percentage closure certificates that are issued in line with the regulatory framework, which are prescribed in Section 43 of the MPRD, where we do assessment of such applications as and when they are lodged. Next one, thanks. Around implementation of transformation policies and legislation, we do have four measures. Then the first one is whereas the law requires all applicants which are compliant to have the participation at the minimum threshold of 26%, we have set ourselves a target as a way of advancing transformation of ensuring that as a minimum, the number of rights and aids and permits issued to historically disadvantaged South African controlled entities, which are 50 plus one, we've set a target of 200 per annum, and around the number of consultations, engagements, and conflict management in communities and mining industries and companies, we've set a target of 230 outlined in the structure, and around number of industry workshops, which we have a target of 9, one in each province, and the number of HDSA entrants applying mining industry, which are clearly articulated in the mining charter, we then set a target there. Of 1,000 for the current financial year. Excellent, thanks. And around the strategic objective on monitoring and enforcement of compliance to achieve compliance with the regulatory framework, there are inspections that are conducted from time to time to validate the quality of submissions made by companies. We have a total of 2,600 inspections that we have planned for the current financial year. And around this six strategic objectives on improving turnaround time. The focus and the measure there is adjudication of prospecting and mining rights application in line with the granting or refusal timeframes. I will take the honorable member through part two of the presentation. And this is the update on the framework agreement for sustainable mining. The framework agreement for sustainable mining was signed by stakeholders from government, business and organized labor in July 2013. The framework had the following key commitments. Number one, ensuring rule of law, peace and stability. Two, strengthening labor relations. Three, implementation of human settlement interventions and improving workplace relations. Four, identification of short to medium term measures necessary to support growth and stability in the mining industry. And the last one, identification of those long-term measures necessary to support growth and stability of the same industry. Next slide. With regard to progress, that has been achieved on various key elements of the framework. The first one around ensuring rule of law, peace and stability. It is important to note that a number of mine crime combating plans have since been established in various localities which are identified to be those affected by positivity and rule of law and peace and stability. Then around the second element of human settlements, which focus on improving living and working conditions of mine workers through implementation of the mine charter, the area that the department is responsible for, it is important to highlight that the link to the targets in the mining charter, the conversion of hotels as prescribed by the mining charter is currently underway and some of the companies have completed. And secondly, that there is a study underway on the migrant labor system. And the third one is that there are projects underway to address housing and other services, with an intention to revitalize mining towns in partnership with other departments. And in this regard, priority is on Granala Platinum District Municipality, which covers the Rustenburg, among others. And furthermore, there is an inter-ministerial committee that has been established and is led by a minister in the presidency. Outside Bujanala Platinum District Municipality, there are other mining sites also that have been identified, and those include Greater Kukuna District Municipality in Limpopo, the Palale Local Municipality within the Waterberg District Municipality also in Limpopo, the Malakeni Local Municipality in Mpumalanga, Western District Municipality in Gauteng, Majabe Local Municipality in the Free State, and the Matosana Local Municipality in the Northwest. And I will proceed to the third part of the presentation, dealing with the implementation then for one environmental scheme for the licensing of mineral resources. It is important to first appreciate where we're coming from at the high level, which were challenges that we were having before this initiative on integration was put in place. We had a situation where you had three departments that were regulating environment for what industry being mining. And just to highlight those clearly, the environmental plan and our program was regulated by DMR. Environmental authorizations with use listed activities were regulated by environmental affairs, both at national and at the provinces. And water use license by water and sanitation department. And these respective rights and authorizations were often processed consecutively rather than concurrently. And it created challenges with regard to investment decisions that need to be taken in mining. And to facilitate the streamlining, there were in principle agreements, the decisions that were taken by ministers of the relevant departments, wherein it was agreed that environmental authorizations in respect of mining and prospecting will be regulated under one system prescribed by NEMA, to the Minister of Mineral Resources will be the designated competent authority in terms of NEMA to implement the environmental system relating to mining and prospecting, and three, that the Minister of Environment will be the designated authority to deal with appeals related to environmental authorizations in respect of mining and prospecting, and fourth, that the MPRJ and NEMA legislation would need to be amended according to give effect to this agreement. And on this slide, we just wanted to give honorable members a sense of an indication of the governance structure that is in place to drive this vision of a integrated system on the environment. That you have at the high level, you all have the ministers of the three departments, be the ones who are overseeing the process, and below the ministers are the three DGs of the relevant departments. There is a committee in place called Interdepartmental Project Implementation Committee, whose chair is rotating among three departments. It has six task teams, which are highlighted there, the coordinated time frames which deal with the alignment of business processes, the enforcement task teams that deal with the joint activities to ensure monitoring and enforce compliance, the joint planning teams that deal with spatial planning issues, linkages of electronic systems, etc. The legislative amendment team, which deals with the appeals process as well as amendments of legislation. The capacity team that identifies capacity required to implement this vision of an integrated system. And the communication team, which self-explanatory, dealing with the communication of this important work. Next slide. What was key to this whole exercise was ensured that, as I was communicated also by the president in the State of the Nation address, was that the mining and the prospecting process would need to follow the MPRJ process clear timeline for finalization of these, being on the mining right side, the 300 days being a target, and on the prospecting right, being 180 days. And two, that the environmental authorization in terms of NEMA and the water use licenses application in terms of the National Water Act will be initiated directly after the acceptance of the application lodged in terms of the MPRDA. and that the process will run parallel and that the decisions will be taken simultaneously. Next slide. On this slide, we wanted to provide a clearly the current status, the implementation plan as well as progress that has been made. The one in the circle in the center, coordinates the entire implementation plan that we're having, and the various circles that we're having are the ones that highlight the salient aspects of the plan. One is that we need to understand the processes that are followed by the Department of Environmental Affairs relating to assessment of environmental authorization. And I'm going to, in a nutshell, at a high level, move from the circle in center to the right, and then in a second come back to that one. Then the other one, we had to identify the scope of work required to give effect to this vision. We had to identify funding constraints and then the requirements to have an organizational structure in place to give effect to this. Recruitment and training of personnel had to take place. Procurement of equipment and then other resources that are necessary needs also to be followed. With regards to DMR, an appreciation of the kinds of guidelines, templates, and checklists that need to be developed to ease and allow our clients who are applicants to be able to lodge applications. Let's appreciate the limitations on some types of applications that are lodged, i.e. around prospecting rights, as well as bulk sampling, and also adjust the acceptance letters to include requirements from the Department of Water and Sanitation, and address application fee issues so that you don't have a situation where the cost of doing business in South Africa is increased, amend the necessary regulations, arrange for electronic linkages of systems, and run awareness campaigns and workshops with our stakeholders, including internal clients or officials of the department. Next slide. With regard to the implementation plan itself, around work already completed, the first one is that the agreement, as I outlined earlier on, with regard to the alignment of processes has been complete, and due to that, there has been the mapping of the type rates and the alignment thereof. That too has been completed. With regard to mining rights as well as the protecting rights. Then the second part is that the piece of legislation has been amended on the side of NEMA, and on the side of the MPRDA too has been amended. We have appointed and placed the 35 officials at our regional offices. We have also made provision for office space, IT equipment, furniture, etc. Adjustment of business process also has taken place. The electronic linkages between the DMR online application system and the Department of Environmental Affairs system and the GIS has been actioned, and meetings are underway to synchronize the systems. Currently, our officials at regional offices are actively involved, and training for them to ramp up their skill set has also taken place, and this is work in progress, so it's ongoing. Next slide. Around where that is still underway, the guidelines, templates, and checklists, which are critical for purpose of application, with a deadline at the end of July 2014, this is important to ensure that adjustments can be made on SAMRA, which is our online licensing system. The second one is accredited training for environmental management inspectors is currently in progress. We're finalizing our internal processes to ensure that this one takes place. Awareness workshops to be conducted, this is an ongoing issue. Capacity building of regional officials, also an ongoing issue. And honorable members, that is the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Okay, now I'm over to honorable members for questions.
There's still one more.
Still some more. Okay. You'll be quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
the last presentation. It's definitely
last program.
Please, let's allow that. Let's allow the last program and no questions so that the Q&A can continue. Can you continue?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The last presentation will be made by Mr. Mabuza. It's on program 4, which is the mineral policy and
promotion.
Musa, can you start?
That to be sound, so that we can also be economical in terms of our time.
Be quick. I will stop you if you are slow.
5 minutes, Musa.
Okay.
Yes, fine. Thank you very much, TG, Honorable Members. I was the program 4 on the mineral policy and promotion. Our purpose is to develop mining minerals and the upstream petroleum industries policies in order to promote investment and the development of these sectors. Next slide. We have those strategic objectives, there's 5 of them, and our presentation ought to be read in conjunction with pages 68 to 78 of the tabled strategic plan. Next slide. In order to promote investment in the mining sector, these are some of the key activities that guide us. I will not go through all of them, but the first one is we publish both technical and promotional documents. We establish technical and strategic partnerships to nurture the growth of the industry and investment. We engage with our social partners. We have created processes for social dialogue that includes organized business and organized labor and other interested and affected parties like civil society and so on. Next slide. We also promote sustainable resource management. An example of our technical partnership is Closer to Home, which is a partnership with our state-owned entities. For instance, we have a standing partnership with the Council of Geoscience as well as MinTech. We have a framework for mine environmental management. We constantly review guidelines. We are responsible for rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines. We have inherited in excess of 6,000 mines that were mined over the period of 100 years when there was no legislation governing derelict and ownerless mines in South Africa. And we are in the process of revising the mining strategy to ensure that it can grow sustainably into the future. Next slide. In order to facilitate the transformation of the mineral sector and sustainable growth, we review and amend policies and regulations. The MPRDA has gone through Parliament. It's currently with the President. The Mine Health and Safety Act, we have amended it. And we have imbued, we have published it for comments and have received quite substantial input from stakeholders. And we have put those into and imbued them into the amendments. And we'll be presenting those to Parliament during this financial year. We are planning to amend the regulations for both the MPRDA and the Mine Health and Safety Act. As the Deputy Minister indicated, this year is the 10th year of the Mining Charter implementation, so we will review that during this financial year. We also plan to develop legislation for establishment of a state mining company, which we'll present to Parliament. And in respect of shale gas, which we'll touch on a bit later, we have prioritized development of hydraulic fracturing regulations. We undertake policy impact reports as well. Next slide. We constantly seek to improve internally, and these are some of the commitments we have undertaken to continue to improve our delivery. Next slide. On beneficiation, coming specifically to the questions honorable members have asked, the mineral beneficiation strategy has been adopted as policy. We have identified the need to strengthen the legal basis, particularly for security of supply of minerals, in respect of Section 26 of the MPRDA bill. That bill is a subject to finalization. The bill itself proposes mechanisms to ensure security of cost-competitive supply
of input minerals in order to effect seamless beneficiation, and the implementation plan is a subject of finalization. A bulk of it has been developed. It's a subject of finalization between ourselves and the Department of Trade and Industry. Next slide. In respect of shale gas, we concluded a detailed technical report on socio-economic impact of shale gas and published it for public comments and consumption. The technical report recommended, amongst others, that there be augmentation of regulations. This is what we are doing with the technical regulations, which will enable, amongst others, the coexistence of shale gas development and the astronomy program of the country, such as the Square Kilometer Array program administered by the Department of Science and Technology, to ensure that there is not only optimal but also environmental responsible development of shale gas. The interdepartmental committee was established. This is led by ourselves in the DMR, and it has developed and published the technical regulations last year, October, and we have received 120 inputs from stakeholders, and we have processed those and have refined where possible and further consulted with other affected departments. And this committee will be embarking on the program of public hearings on these draft regulations during the month of July. Next slide. On acid mine drainage, the cabinet appointed the Interministerial Committee on Acid Mine Drainage in 2010, which comprises of the Ministries of Mineral Resources, Water Affairs, Science and Technology, and National Planning Commission. The IMD appointed a team of experts, and these experts reported on the assessment and the appraisal of the risk in February 2011. The Department of Water Affairs is responsible for the engineering design of the solutions, the implementation, as well as monitoring of the project, whereas on the DMR part, we play a larger role on the research program and projects that give effect to the recommendations of the IMC report, which include the interventions on the colonization of the natural water course from the Florida Lake. We'll show you a picture in the next slide. In order to prevent ingress, ingress was quantified at 20 megaliters per day. We have been able to divert that water ingress into the underground workings that eventually become acid mine drainage. This Florida Lake canal extends between Florida Lake as well as the Vloeihof Dam in Florida, Johannesburg. And the next, which is the last slide, is a shot of the canal that diverts the water that would ordinarily find its way into the previous underground dwellings. We thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Our members, you can start with your question.
I must join another meeting which starts now at 1 o'clock. But the first question that I want to pose is in relation to the process, how far is the process of the state-owned mining company, just for the benefit of this committee, because you are now in the new administration. Chairperson, again, if you go to the main document on this document, strategic plan, maybe the department can share with us that I've picked up that their targets are studies actually, unless I'm reading the document, etc. If you go to page, a classical example, page 58, and mineral regulation, the equitable and sustainable benefits from mining resources. The number of SLP development projects is 1,000,000, 7,000, 7,000. It continues like that. What informs the formula of determination of your targets? That's point number one, though I will not be here when you respond to that. The issue of the budget. The budget that is going to increase, you are saying, is because of the rehabilitation, specialized skills, and ownerless mines. There's a lot of consistency, Chairperson, but I accept that point because they are giving the reason why the increase in terms of the budget, so that we could hold them accountable when they meet us next time. But the stock of consistency, all other elements. That's to say, the internal capacity on the issues of inspections, the health inspections. Maybe the committee again could share, not the committee, the department could share with us on Bojanala. Why Bojanala becomes or is leering in terms of all your revitalization or township revitalization projects. Yes, I've seen the issue of housing and other services. But I suppose the government should have a holistic approach in terms of this project. And if you say, yeah, I think let me just leave it there. A holistic approach in terms of your mining revitalization township or township revitalization project. Can I be released? Can I be released? Beneficiation project. Is the jewelry the only focus? And if yes, why? Linked to that is the support for SMMBs. The document says it's non-financial. I don't want to assume that I understand the content of the document. Thank you. Honorable Chris.
About the target, it is difficult. I'm not going to repeat, but it is difficult. For instance, on page 28, targets have been set out for a number of years, 2020, 2014-15, 2015-16, 2020, but 0 2016-2017. And I mean, how, what informs you to make that kind of putting that kind of target here to say they will, no, I don't know what you mean, if it's applications or what. Will they know people be supported for bursaries or what? So if there was a target like you were setting out in, like for instance on page 27, compensation of employees, there is a target that we where we can measure, like the previous year, and I can understand if it was like this, that we can see in the previous year, it was the target was 10, but now it will be 20. So yeah, it's difficult to understand what informs the thinking of the target that you're putting here for us as an oversight body. Thank you.
Let me also, Honorable Smith, recognize it. But let me also raise this question. Your linkage with the integrated development plan of the local municipality, particularly the social labor plan, what is your relationship with the local municipalities to counteract this booming or mushrooming informal settlement in the surrounding? The second question is from my side, compliance, the enforcement of compliance in all the mining industry. The capacity that you are having, or your inter-collaborations with your sister department, such as the Department of Labor, they assist in maybe inspecting
growing a pool of inspectors to make sure that there is compliance. Okay. Thank you. Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Chairperson. The one item I want to add on to what you just said is in terms of compliance of mine regarding social responsibility, where mines bring additional burdens to municipal infrastructure, for example, roads, water, sanitation, all that. How does that fit in? Because previous experiences that I had with engagement with mines in Mogalakwena, for example, is, you know, it's like, okay, we help with water, but the roads is left one side, so it's your problem. How do that comes into play? The other thing is, what processes or regulations is in place to ensure that mines do not manipulate this compliances through, you know, I'm going to be quite crude on it, a bribery on, you know, tribal leaders to sideline the ordinary community members, because that seems to be problematic. The other thing I want to ask is on the water supply from the Flagbashilo water scheme to Mogalakwena, as there's high potential mining developments, you know, it's ready to start off, but there's some delay. I just want to get some clarity around that, which obviously will simulate a lot of job creation, economic growth, and so forth. And how ready are we for that booming as well? And then on the full spray mine in the Nelson Flay, I want to hear how did it happen that this mine got prospecting rights in a flay land area which is not permitted at all? Because that's problematic, and a lot of community members is concerned about that. I think that's basically my question. Thank you.
Maybe we can allow some responses to the department. But further to that, there will be also a department will be requested to submit the response also in writing.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The first issue which was raised was the issue of purposes with regards to the state-owned mining company. The state-owned, what has happened is that a company called African Exploration Mining Finance Company Corporation, which is a subsidiary of the Central Energy Fund, has been identified as a nucleus to create this state-owned mining company. They have already started operating. They have one mine which is currently operating, and they have got two other mines which are in the pipeline. Now, the intention here, if you have, if there's a in the presentation on mineral promotion and policy, they indicated that they would be bringing to Parliament a bid on this company to create it as a standalone company and to create a framework in which it can operate. So in fact, following a lot of discussions with National Treasury, that this process was agreed upon. The issues of the target, in some areas, the targets are mainly informed by the resources which we have within the department. Sometimes we believe that we have really stretched ourselves as a department with the limited resources we have. So if we have more resources, we will be able to adjust those targets. The other ones which we found that we can actually we stretch ourselves, even in mine health and safety, you can see that one we have changed. We said we want to reduce fatality. We have come with a percentage. But there are certain areas whereby we realize that, look, like the issue of jobs was so interesting when we discussed it as a department. We said, you know, under these circumstances, it's not going to be very, very easy if you take into consideration.
question, what happened to the platinum mines, you know. Creation of jobs in this current year is going to be very, 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 very difficult. Maybe next year we can start to see things changing. So I would say most of the time it's informed by the resources which we have within the inspection, number of inspections which we can undertake. We look at the number of people which we have and say, look, I think we have reached a point where it will be very, very difficult. But we will review them on an annual basis and we will come back to the committee and discuss the many more detailed issues as we review this target. The institutional capacity of the inspectors, yes, I'm as the chief inspector of mines to add on that one. It is always a challenge, especially with the mine health and safety inspector, because they are dealing with engineers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, mining engineers, who are experienced, because you can't have someone who is inexperienced being put in a position of inspecting people. So that's a challenge. And then we end up having a situation where we compete with the mines for this engineers. It's very, very difficult for us as a department to compete with them in terms of salaries. So we battle to really attract people when it comes to inspectors. And maybe the chief inspector of mines can talk about it. We have even started a program in the department to say, let's have 50 learners annually who will be dedicated to the department. We're training them to be eventual inspectors in the department. But now it needs partnership with mining companies. Fortunately, the mining companies are willing. They say, okay, put them with us. Okay, so we take them from university, from the university. We put them with the mines. They work with some of our inspectors. It's a long program. Plus, I think we've got 6 years or so, four years program. But for a person to be really competent, you're looking at 5 to 6 years. Whereby this person can go out and inspect. Maybe a little bit on that.
Thank you, DJ. I think you've covered it excellently well. We do have this challenge, and we are working together with the mines and the mining qualification with the programs, not only for us, but also making sure that there's enough pool for the sector. So I think DJ covered it well.
The other one on Janala, why did we choose Janala? There has been a process which is led in the presidency when it comes to the issue of revitalization of distressed mining camps. And Janala was identified because of the challenges which we experienced there, because we had to prioritize, and that process had a bit. Let's focus on Janala. There will be other mining camps which will actually also be looked at. That is how this came about. The holistic approach to address social and labor plan, certainly it is extremely important. What the bill which is currently with the president, the MPRDA bill, has recognized this issue in terms of our amendment. What we are looking at here was saying that we need to ensure that the social and labor plan is integrated in the IDPs of the municipalities. That alignment is so critical for the success of the social and labor plan. And I think if we can get that one right, because if you have municipalities, you're bringing a number of municipalities at district level, coming to them and say, look, let's put, and even the mines there, which are there, they all together, they say, let's put together our resources and plan together for this area. I think we'll achieve a lot. And now, in terms of the new bill, consultation will be enforced when it comes to that. That will be addressed when it comes to the issues of social plan and development. Because without that integration, we'll have a mind which will decide, okay, I'm going to build a school. Well, Department of Health has already got plans for building a school. You know? So if the Department of Health is going to build a school, a man can say, look, we will build a clinic here. We will bring maybe infrastructure. Then it needs partnership to
succeed are extremely important. On the issue of beneficiation, whether why jewelry? It's not only jewelry which we're focusing on. In fact, the beneficiation strategy has identified five value chains, which will be the platinum mine, the titanium value chain, the coal value chain, the jewelry value chain, and the what is the last one? The five value chains which have been identified. The energy one. So those five value chains which have been identified, we will be working on them. The jewelry one, I think in the presentation they emphasized on it because there was a jewelry workshop which was held last week, which identified a lot of things which should be addressed. There's a full action plan already on the jewelry. The other ones will be working on them. The SME, why non-financial? Our view with the SME is that, you know, as a department, we need to focus on providing technical support to them. That is why it's called non-financial. Maybe the word non-financial we could use a different way. But here we're saying that if a small-scale miner needs assistance, we will identify institutions such as the Council for Geoscience, institutions such as the CSIR and MINTEC to provide that support. But financially, we will not give them money directly. This is why we call it non-financial, because we believe if they've got to get money directly, then they must go to the IDCs of the sovereigns in the land. But if they need technical support, we will provide our funds, will go to these institutions, workshops for them, you know. We hold workshops for them. If there is some kind of technical expertise which they need, we provide them with those expertise. That is how we look at it. That's why it's called non-financial. Social plan and labor mushrooming of informal settlement. Certainly, it's around, you know, what I said earlier. It's actually town planning. We sit down with the municipalities and we agree on how, you know, the mines can contribute towards the development of a town or a city, you know, or I think that is what is needed. Partnership, strong partnership, enhancing that partnership. And that will address most of the issues there. And the inspection, I think we have touched on it. The social integration of SMPs, we have touched on that. Process or regulation in place to ensure that there's no bribery on tribal leaders. we don't tolerate crime. We don't tolerate crime. We don't. We always believe in officials who are, you know, who respect values, basic values of life. And in the department, we talk about it most of the time. We say, we tell people that don't associate yourself with all the groups. And while people are people, if we found that there are people who are doing this, we'll report them to the authorities. But I can tell you, in the department, we don't tolerate that. We don't tolerate that issue, people being involved in that. But in the mind, right, people outside, third party out there, we are not part of that. We cannot be paid for that. But as a department, if we are aware of that, we will take the necessary action. Nohala Gwena and Nels Flake. Joel, do you want to touch on this one? Nels Flake, how did the mind get the height?
Thanks. The attorney committee to go and investigate, submit a 10 report. That's
on the
two.
Okay. If that's okay, the chairperson, we can provide you with information on these two issues. Fine.
Yeah, maybe as requested that even some of the response will come also in writing. The information of investigation
Maybe we need to put some deadline on that as to how soon will it be submitted as well. Okay. I don't know from honorable members whether there are some still second or it will be sent, submitted also in writing. Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe my question around the tribal leaders and the brotherhoods may be misunderstood. I'm not saying how to handle that. I'm asking specifically what regulations is in place to ensure we mines have to engage in tribal communities to make sure that it minimizes that risk of bribery taking place, because it's an easy way to go through the leadership and sideline the community. So my question is basically, is a compliance regulation in place to ensure that that does not happen?
Maybe just explain the process of consultation. When someone applies for for the rise, what happens, especially where there are tribal leaders? That's the area where we'll be involved, because we'll expect the applicants to go and consult with the affected parties. Let me just explain to you that. But if the applicant start to be involved in Algeria processes where we are not there, it's very difficult for us to intervene. But do I need to explain the process?
Thank you, PC. In respect of applications on communal land and around the area of consultation, firstly, let me highlight that the onus on consultation is with the applicant. And when doing consultation, there will then be various categories of people who are consulted. You do have what we call interested and affected parties. And then which will then be documented. And within that range or pool of interested and affected parties, you will then have those who are directly affected, and others will then be impacted, and others will then have an interest in the project. When the process of actual consultation is taking place, starting first with the application, after the application is accepted, the applicant will be ordered to go and conduct the consultation. And where there are traditional leaders, we always insist that as part of the results of such consultation, that they should prove that there was consultation with the traditional leader, and as well as the proof of how such consultation took place, where it took place, who was there, the roll call, as well as whether the authority that was indeed consulted is the one. We also acknowledge that there are instances where you do find that there are disputes over traditional leadership, and I think that may be one of the issues that Honorable Mepham may be highlighting. It is a matter that we then also take up the necessary competent authority for traditional leaders, which will be the department responsible for traditional leaders. And when such results then do come back, where we then, especially in communities, are always focused in highlighting instances where they then would be unhappy with the quality of some of the consultations that may have taken place. And honorable members would be aware that one of these cases ended up in Limpopo in particular, being taken to court. It went up to the Constitutional Court. And to the results of what transpired in the court, to strengthen guidelines that we developed on the area of consultation, in particular, and taking into account the concerns that were raised on communal and relationship consultations with traditional leaders and communities. The one point that I also need to highlight is that there are remedies where communities may then say, or some other members of the committee and or the traditional leadership, him or herself, may then say that I was not properly consulted. And those are through appeal mechanisms if the decision has already been taken, and or through an objection that will then be raised, which then get referred to a statutory structure called RENDEC for purpose of attending to the consultation, the quality that may have accentuated the objection. And those are dealt with properly and thoroughly, and the component in this case is invited
to a properly consisted REMDEC committee to come and present his or her objection, leading to either the quality of consultation and or substantive issues leading to such consultation, dealt with legally in all respects, and a record of such effect. And then, if need be, such record can be accessed. So all issues pertaining to consultation are therefore handled within the framework of the law. But we do acknowledge that this is an area that there continues to be work in progress. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will allow the department now to be excused, and then members will continue with the business of the day. And the member remains seated, the honorable members, and then excuse the department.
Thank you very much for your presentation.